House energy will come to order. Clerk will take the roll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bishop.
Excused.
Representative Brewster.
Excused.
Representative Fielder.
Excused.
Representative Galloway.
Present.
Representative Green.
Here.
Representative Harvey.
Here.
Representative Kazmaier.
Excused.
Representative Kometz.
Excused.
Representative C. Knudsen.
Excused.
Representative Cordham.
Here.
Representative Phelan.
Here.
Representative Fielder's here.
Yes, please let the record show Representative Fielder is here. All right, we have a quorum and we are ready to do business. Just so everyone can prepare really quickly before we start our hearings, we will be doing executive action today. We will be taking EA on Senate Bill 32, Senate Bill 33, Senate Joint Resolution 10, and Senate Bill 208. With that, we will open the hearing on Senate Bill 384. Senator Zolnikov.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Daniel Zolnikov, the senator. That was my pirate joke from Senate District 22. That's the only one I'll have. In front of you is Senate Bill 384. So I'm going to take a step back from the bill and say, let's pretend we live in a world where we have the internet and your life revolves around the internet. And most of your data is collected on the internet and it could be shared, sold, traded, and you have very little rights of your data online today. Why? Because our Congress doesn't do anything. Senate doesn't do, like, our federal entities don't do anything. We've had, I think, one or two updates since the 1996 Internet Act that aren't of substance. And as we know, in Congress, money rules the world. So if tech companies don't want this to pass, it won't pass. That's the world we live in today. So now states are saying, we are tired of having no protections for our very personal data in the world online, and we would like some. So in the last few years since I last served, because it was so long ago, that was tongue-in-cheek, states have started passing this type of legislation and saying, you know, if the feds aren't going to do anything, we are going to start acting and making sure that our consumers' data is protected. And that is what this bill does. So I'll give you the big overview. I modeled this after, there's a few states, Colorado, Utah, Connecticut, Virginia, California, that have legislation like this. And from the privacy rights perspective, Connecticut had one of the stronger ones. California was very top heavy from my perspective. And I think a lot of people for our industry. So that wasn't the goal. Utah was where I was going to start, but it was actually, from my aspect, it's pretty watered down and looked like it just put current practices into law without giving the right consumers any further rights. So this is modeled after the Connecticut bill. And I know we have our political differences, but when it comes to policy like this, especially privacy policy, the Republican-Democrat side tends to come together on some of these issues. So this was modeled after that, and I worked with some tech entities to try to figure out what works, what doesn't work, and that has led to many conversations. So what does the bill do? Let's start on page 8, section 5. This is the big picture of what the policy will do. And that says consumer personal data opt-out compliance. A consumer must have the right to confirm whether a controller is processing the consumer's personal data and access the consumer's personal data. The consumer must have the right to correct inaccuracies in the consumer's personal data, delete personal data about the consumer, obtain a copy of the consumer's personal data, opt out of the processing of the consumer's personal data for the purpose of either targeted advertising or sale of that data. So I know it's a 20-page bill because when you're dealing with probably hundreds of companies, many that some we know and many we do not, they all have their lawyers and they have all been working on this legislation down to single words, letters, commas to come to terms. So the definitions are just a few pages alone to get the whole industry on the same page. So changing three or four words could have a detrimental impact. I'll give you an example I used in the Senate side. Dark pattern means a user interface designed or manipulated with the effect of substantially subverting or impairing user autonomy, decision-making, or choice. I mean, we're not going to be experts on this technical language. I won't be either. And so what I did was rely, since there's multiple states, on some of the most agreed on language in the industry. And there's a lot of that. The term sale, there's an entity that opposes the bill because the term sale says, in its page 4, line 22, the sale of personal data means the exchange of personal data for monetary or other valuable consideration by the controller to a third party. So again, this bill would allow a consumer, you, to opt out of the sale of your data. So that is in that section 5 that we walked through. And the term sale is the exchange of personal data for money. That's common sense, right? You sell something for money. Or other valuable consideration. Now, I asked this committee to leave those words in because there is also a type of exchange of data that can occur. I don't sell my data to you, but we exchange data because you have my location data and I have your profile information about your age and interests. So you can actually have a mutual sharing of data. So if we change that definition, as some people want to change it, then you won't be able to opt out of people exchanging your data. You're only selling it for monetary consideration. I also asked some of the groups to say, I said, hey, can we like clarify it? And the answer was no, or at least I didn't get any good clarifying language because all they want to do is strike the language. So again, it's pretty delicate because little things like this could lead to either, like little changes can lead to a lot. It's not simple. You kind of went through the bulk of it. It's a very long piece of legislation. Again, no new code should be 20 pages, but if you're dealing with the internet and the lack of action federally, this is what we're left with. I think this had pretty good support in the Senate. It came out, I think, 50-0 through the floor. And it's a pretty solid start to ensuring our rights. We have rights first when our data comes into play, and we can ensure that incorrect data is corrected, things are deleted and not shared. So I'll be here for questions. I'm not going to say I can answer everything, but I will definitely attempt to. Also, again, it's challenging to read. How lucky I have that going on for me right now, too. So with that, I will be here to answer questions, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. We will open to proponents in the room, please.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Cape, C-A-P-E, and I'm here representing the Coalition for Safety and Justice. Privacy has become a key issue for us because your privacy affects your safety, it affects your freedom, it affects your community. And as Senator Zolnikoff eloquently stated, we have no controls. And I'm not trying to be facetious, but an Amazonian tribesman literally has more legal privacy rights than a Montanan. Brazil copied what they call the GDPR, the privacy regulation of Europe, and so that is their national law. This bill, what's nice about it is it uses similar terms. So one company can look it over here and say, okay, well, that we understand that. That we've had a court case on. Yeah, we don't want to do that because you're, Google in particular, they pay $5 billion a quarter to Europe because they don't follow the law, which would certainly help our budget restraint. but we have no rules. Give you an example, and some of it is people don't pay attention. How many people have free games on their phone? You ever wonder why they want access to your camera and your microphone? Where do you charge your phone? Hopefully not next to your bed. Well, some of that, that's private data. And some of that, we have information through various groups I belong to that you might be, if you're interesting enough, on Czechoslovakian TV or Czech TV because they have no rules about amateur hour. So you don't have no control. You absolutely have no control over that data. You don't have control over your location. You don't have any control over the data they collect of who you're with, where you went, what you purchased, anything. You absolutely have no control. So do you have any privacy? I can go online and purchase your guys' information, and I can tell you everywhere you went for the last 30 days and everybody you talked to and everybody they talked to. And for singling out individuals because you don't like them because of race, religion, or whatever, yeah, they actually sell that data. We're going to give you location data on all the Catholics that are in Helena and whether they went to Mass last week. So that would be embarrassing for me because I'm Catholic and I didn't go to Mass last week. But, you know, that is the state of privacy. The reason why I say this is where I work. I'm a privacy professional. I work with companies and trying to, you know, get them to honestly obey the regulations in different countries and states. And it is a whack-a-mole operation. Not because the states are unclear. It's because some of these companies keep figuring out a way around them. And I go, no, you can't do that. Your information is sold 5,200 times a day. There's a auction. Google usually runs it. You're sold 5,200 times a day. If you've got one piece of information in a company, you're roughly sold about 800 times, just that little piece of information. You don't have any control. I can tell what you bought. And if you read the terms of service of some of these, it even says they're going to collect information on your ability to smell. If you look at Under Armour privacy policy, they're collecting your smell data, which I don't know. I kind of shake my head on that one. But fragrances, things like that, it's all important. You're the commodity. And as Montanans, we have in the Constitution a right to privacy, but not a right to privacy against private individuals. Do you have an Android phone and wonder why as soon as you get out of the Taco Bell drive-thru, you get a satisfaction survey? It's kind of creepy. Or like they told me a few minutes ago, I've got 3 hours to home. How did they know I was here? I don't have any control. This bill is a good control start. The other nice thing about it, it gives a good framework. And as we add to this framework, it will create economic benefits for Montana. As we comply and get into compliance with the Europeans, there's some cases called SREM 1 and SREM 2, which has to go with data between us and Europe. Right now, Europe doesn't want to give us any data because of the Snowden issue and spying. But if we came into compliance with or similar laws to the GDPR, that would make Montana the ultimate place to put their server in the United States. That would be the place where they could store their information in the United States. And that leads to one last thing, and I've talked to the sponsor about it, is that there should be an amendment in this bill that says the information collected on Montana individuals or in Montana must be stored within the territorial boundaries of the United States. Once it gets out of the United States, you have no control, and they really don't care about U.S. or Montana law. If it's stored in the United States, you have protection. And give you a case for thought. During the interim, when we were receiving, when I was attending the economic interim committee, a school district testified that they were doing facial recognition data with a particular company. That company stores the student data in England and in Singapore with a subtrail through China. So you know where that went. So keeping it in the United States, I think, would be an easy amendment. So with that, I stand here ready for your questions. My background is I am a member of the International Association of Privacy Professionals. I am also a member of the American Bar Association Committees on Privacy, International Law, and Data Security. So with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cape. Further proponents in the room, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Bridger Malum. That's M-A-H-L-U-M, here with Charter Communications. And we also rise in support of Senate Bill 384. Thanks to the sponsor for what I know has been years of hard work getting to this point and working with a lot of stakeholders to get there. For us as a company, ensuring privacy of our consumers is the utmost importance. And so when we've started to see how is this conversation being held at both the federal level as well as at the state level, and of course, as the sponsor alluded to, there's not a lot happening at the federal level. A federal solution would have been certainly the preference, but in absence of that, with the states forging ahead, we wanted to pay close attention to how that was going to work. And one of the big things we care about, of course, is we operate in multiple states. How different or similar are these policies going to be on a state-by-state basis, and how will that work from an administration standpoint for us? And so, obviously, some uniformity is going to be something we pay close attention to and would support. And then also, as we look at these bills that are being discussed, is there parity among the industries that would be impacted as far as who has the obligations, or I wouldn't even say obligations, but just the mechanisms to comply with? Is it just internet service providers? Is it just other companies? And so we wanted to see it be broadly applicable to all industries as this thing goes forth. And so, we think that this bill does a great job of achieving both of those things and making them not a concern for us. And so, through parity, of course, you can tell through this bill that the handling of personal information is not based on who's collecting the data or what type of service is being offered. It's just broadly applicable. And of course, and big appreciation to the sponsor for also recognizing the importance of keeping it relatively consistent with other states and the ones that, like the ones that he had mentioned before. We think that's just a great start to this process for Montana. And I think just overall, I'd leave you with, we think that Senate Bill 384 strikes a great balance between consumer protections and enough functionality for industry to be able to comply. And so, Madam Chair, if I may just hand out my written testimony, I will conclude with that and would urge it to pass.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there further proponents in the room?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margaret Morgan, M-O-R-G-A-N. I represent T-Mobile. I won't repeat what Mr. Malum testified to, because we feel that way exactly. We appreciate the sponsor of the bill modeling after this, after some other state legislation that we are comfortable with and support. In light of a national standard. So we worked with the sponsor to ask about an amendment, a very technical amendment, and I believe that it's a friendly amendment along with three or four others. And with that, without repeating any of the prior testimony, I would just like to say we support this bill with what we hope and believe to be a friendly amendment from the sponsor. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan. Further proponents in the room, please. Seeing none, we will go to proponents online. We'll begin with Ann Blackwood, please.
Madam Chair, I believe she is a proponent for Senate Bill 351.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot what number we were on. Okay. We will go to Ryan Harkins, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ryan Harkins. I am Senior Director of Public Policy with Microsoft, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify. We support Senate Bill 384. We at Microsoft have long taken privacy seriously, and we've been calling for comprehensive privacy legislation in the United States since 2005. But 18 years later, we find ourselves, of course, with no federal law on the books and with much of the rest of the world moving ahead to regulate privacy. And in our view, there's an urgent need for new and robust laws to address real concerns that consumers have raised across the country and to help restore the public's trust in technology while enabling businesses to continue to innovate with certainty and confidence. And so for several years now, we've been supporting efforts across the states who are increasingly stepping up into that void of leadership to advance comprehensive privacy laws. There are several components that we think are important and need to be part of any privacy bill in order to ensure that it provides strong and credible protections for consumers and clear rules for businesses. And SB 8384 does that in our view. First, it has strong definitions, and definitions specifically that would ensure that the bill will apply to the kinds of modern online data sets that are used to track and target consumers on the internet today. So that means data, not just data that is identified or stored with your name, but data that is identifiable, meaning data that could identify you indirectly because it is stored with a cookie ID or an IP address. A second, any bill has to empower consumers with rights to control their personal data, rights like the right to access your personal data, to delete it, to correct it, and consent rights, such as the right to opt out of the collection and use of personal data for certain sensitive uses like data sales or targeted advertising. And this bill would do that. And third, we think it's important for privacy bills to apply affirmative obligations on companies to require them to be responsible stewards of the data they collect. And that means things like requiring companies to conduct risk assessments of their data processing activities, to be transparent about what they're doing, to apply data minimization and other principles. And SB 384 would do that too. So in closing, thank you for your leadership and in your interest in moving comprehensive privacy legislation. We would urge you to pass the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Harkins. Seeing no further proponents online, we'll move to opponents in the room, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robin Turner. My name is spelled R-O-B-I-N-T-U-R-N-E-R. I'm here on behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union in opposition to this bill. So to start, I appreciate the sponsor's overview of this issue and recognizing that there is a vacuum when we talk about protecting consumer data. I would urge us to consider the sponsor's call to action to make things more protective for Montana citizens by really keeping in mind that in Montana we have an express individual right of privacy. And so these bills being supported by tech companies that still have a lot of options to utilize your data, I wonder if we need to not go a step further. I will agree with the sponsor that a great many states have passed bills that have opt-out provisions like this bill does, which is Section 5. Thank you. You know, some of the concerns that the American Civil Liberties Union has around a limited opt-out is this allows collection and use of sharing of personal information unless the consumer opts out. And it only allows us as consumers to protect ourselves by opting out of two categories, or three in this bill, I think. Targeted advertising, which you can see on page 9, line 10, and page 9, line 11, the sale of consumers' personal data. So this framework, and then additionally profiling and furtherance of automated decisions. I actually honestly don't really know what that sentence means. This framework places a burden entirely on the consumer to wade through legalese with multiple service providers in order to exercise their privacy rights. And if you can only opt out from a sale of personal information, but not the broad use of the information? Does that mean that larger companies like Facebook and Google can still use your information mostly untouched? I think that Mr. Cape said it well, or started to say it, you know, if a service is free, you're the product, right? So Facebook and Google will claim not to sell your personal information, but can amass that information and buy other people's information from other companies and then sell access to tools. So the ACLU would suggest that there be an opt-in requirement instead of putting the burden on consumers to opt out of this collection. Could we create something where the where consumers would opt in? And again, I'll be completely frank and say that there aren't any states that have passed such a comprehensive Consumer Data Privacy Act with opt-in provisions. But again, I think Montana has a unique opportunity to do that and a unique understanding and respect for privacy rights. There are a few states that have done an opt-in bill about particular parts of technology and the use of technology, and I'm happy to share that if that is of interest to people. Another concern that we have with the bill is around page 10. So under, again, that same section talking about a consumer's ability to opt out. Right now, the companies would basically allow one free opt-out during a 12-month period. So that means that if you needed to opt out of the sharing of your personal data more than once, basically you could be charged by the provider. Again, we worry about the equity when someone is targeted or wants their information to be removed, charging them for that. Another part of this bill is about enforcement, and that's under section, sorry, I'm going so slow, but I want to make sure I get everything right. Section 12, which allows for the Attorney General to pursue a claim for violation against companies. I wonder what this committee's thoughts are around creating a private right of action, because people have little practical ability to seek their relief. So this eliminates an incentive for companies to comply with the law. And people might, and you might hear from the proponents that this will just create clog in our courts. Again, any sort of litigation that you're pursuing against another person or a company, in order to have an attorney take that case, they're not going to take a case that has no basis, right? I understand that some people might disagree with that, but generally, I don't see that as increasing frivolous lawsuits. There's a few other concerns that we have. There is a piece on page 17, again, section 11, lines 23 to 25. So nothing in these sections restricts a controller or processor's ability to cooperate with law enforcement agencies concerning conduct or activity that controller or processor reasonably and in good faith believes may violate federal, state, or municipal ordinances or regulations. You know, generally that's not the standard for pursuing information in a criminal investigation, right? In Montana, generally to have a search or seize information, you need to have a warrant. And so placing this decision-making authority with the people who are holding the data, again, create some concerns for the American Civil Liberties Union. Again, we appreciate the start and the conversations that we're having. We just have some concerns that if we set at this level, will future legislators and future folks like you come in and increase those privacy protections for consumers, or are we going to just kind of keep it at this base level? So for those reasons, we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. Further opponents in the room, please. Seeing none and seeing none online, we'll move to informational witnesses in the room. Seeing none and seeing none online, we'll go to questions from the committee. Representative Cordham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Mr. Cape, please.
Mr. Cape.
Madam Chairman, Representative.
Madam Chair, Mr. Cape, when we think about these entities collecting our data, we often think about like Google or Facebook. In 2017, Congress repealed a law that prevented ISPs from gathering your data and selling it. I was wondering, would ISPs be covered in this bill as well?
That's an interesting question. I would say yes, but limited. And the reason why I say that is they do collect a certain amount of data. They would be considered a controller, I believe, under the bill. So they would be covered. However, that's about it. There isn't, this is a good framework, I guess is probably the best way to say it. It's a good framework, it's a good start. There is a great need to work on this, I would say, through the interim and have additional sideboards put on it next session. I do caution the legislature that you probably have a two, maybe a four-year window to put the cows back in the fence. After that, I'm not sure whether we'll all be shot or not. I take that not as, you know, a conspiracy theorist. I just look at what's going on around the world and all the data collection. And we'll get into that a little bit in the next bill. But yes, I believe they would be covered, but in a limited way because they're the way they handle the data and process the data. They have to process the data to get you from your computer to whatever you're going to go watch. They are going to, or whatever you're going to do. So there is data that they collect on the other end. There is a misnomer that if you put up your privacy window, that they're somehow not going to collect you. No, that is all collected. Whether you're private or not. It's just that nobody can get on your computer and see that you watched Mickey Mouse when you were supposed to be working. But so, yeah, there is a data there.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Madam Chair, Mr. Cape, are there other ways of evading the data collection? Not necessarily to the end provider, but the ISP?
ISPs or apps, yes, there is ways of evading. It depends on if you want to evade the data collection, use a virtual private network on your phone and on your computer. Then the ISP sees you go out, but your actual location and information is encoded, and you could look as though you're in Croatia. If you're on your phone, there's an app that will send your location data to another country, and you can watch yourself in real time stroll down the Champs-Élysées. There are ways of getting around that information. Can an ISP also get around that? This is the problem with privacy and technology. It's a whack-a-mole. What they come up with next week, I have no idea. I was shocked to find that Google had engineered the Chinese balloon controls. So, yeah, yes, the Chinese balloon was controlled by Google AI. And so that was kind of interesting. So I guess thank you, Google. But, you know, how many people, the Internet service provider that in between they collect the data, but they don't necessarily fully process it. Does that make any sense? So you really have to have two. What's going on with the internet provider? And then you have to look at what you blindly signed up for without reading the terms of service. And I alluded to that. How many people have a free game and just said, okay, they can have access to my phone and my microphone? Why does Candy Crush need that? Think about it. So you have two parts. So, yes, you can evade anything. That's why they pay attorneys way more than I get. So,
thank you, Mr. Cape. I have one more follow-up for the sponsor, please, Madam Chair.
Senator. Madam Chair.
You'd only do that once.
I know. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, Senator, we heard from Mr. Cape that adopting a policy like the GDPR in Europe would probably make Montana a prime place for investment in data centers. But I think in opponent testimony, we kind of heard that this might be insufficient to meet kind of that standard. It doesn't go far enough, the opt-in, et cetera. Can you speak to that, please?
Madam Chair, Representative, so there's a few questions there. Remember one thing, in Montana, there is no law, there is no code. So we have to start somewhere. Now, I tried to work with some companies, and people said, well, Microsoft supported it. Microsoft is actually one of the most pro-privacy companies, big companies. They've left other associations because they will not get on board with pro-privacy stuff. So that should blow your mind, because when I learned that, I said, whoa, no way, Microsoft? And so that's one thing to keep in mind. We have nothing in place. So my first session, I'll just allude to that really quick. I was 25, and I did my first privacy bill to say that you own your data and everything. I had 40 people out. They tabled the bill immediately, like 40 opponents. I also lacked a little bit of tact. I will acknowledge that. Sometimes I still do. But what I'm saying is, yeah, we can go for it all. And if you want to have 40 groups come in here and start and just burn the whole thing down because we went for everything, we can go for that, right? What we don't have is anything in place. And that's all I'm trying to do is, this is still a very good framework. Is it perfect? No, it's not. And Mr. Cape's correct. It's whack-a-mole. In 1970, there was a Newsweek, the front page said, is privacy dead? Okay. That was 1970. Okay. And then you got the internet, Google came out. I was Googling things in high school, actually. And it's only expanded. So people were like, why do you waste your time on this? It's dead. We haven't lacked privacy for 20 some years on serious privacy issues. But think of where we're going to be in 200 years. There's technology that they're testing that could actually see your brain waves and try to identify what you're thinking, okay? It's going fast. It's going far. Let's get this in place, and let's try to stay up on it. If no one else wants to, I swear I will keep working on this as long as I'm in the legislature, and I will try to keep this. But we need policies in place to get there. And so that's, you know, I can't be ahead of it. We're a citizen legislature 4 months every other year, but man, we can at least be one of the first states to start implementing this. Did you have another question?
Thank you, Senator. Madam Chair.
Further questions from the committee? Vice Chair Galloway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to start with Mr. Cape.
Mr. Cape.
Madam Chair, Mr. Cape, I was at an international conference for companies in Montana that do business out in the world, and they spent a lot of time in the most popular class they had that day was teaching them what they had to do to meet these privacy concerns, because if you're doing business in these foreign countries, you take responsibility for their data. Mm-hmm. And why are we so far behind? I mean, some of these are small countries, and they're way ahead of us.
I have no idea, but that's how I earn a living, is trying to help them get through that. So why are we so far behind? Because it's too big of an issue, and there's too much money. Like I said, Google gets fined every quarter, it seems, $5 billion for breaching data regulations in Europe. It's a cost of doing business. You're sold 5,000 times. I make a dollar every time you're sold, let's say if I'm a data person. That's $5,000 a day times billions of people.
Follow up. So, Madam Chair, Mr. Cape, is it feasible from your viewpoint to, are we, with this framework, are we getting a structure to head us down the path that some of these other, I mean, do we have to reinvent the wheel, or is the pattern in these other countries consistent, like we've heard the companies here, we'd like something that works consistently through the process? Are we going to be marrying into those countries' processes too?
To some extent, yes. When you're going to do, let's say, business with Europe, you're going to do something with Europe. You're going to collect. And one of my first beginnings was in HR software and employment position client, candidate collection software. Well, you would get candidates from Croatia. You'd get candidates from Yugoslavia. You know, all these different countries. And so their data had to be within the grounds of the GDPR. So they had to be, you know, they have a right to be forgotten. So we had to put in, you know, and make sure that their data was immediately destructible. To do those things, yes, we are going to have to model some of their ideas. And why not? They're ahead of us. So if we model some of their ideas, but if we go beyond their ideas, we certainly can and would make us even more competitive, I think. But yes, we're going to, Canada, you can't get data from Canada to Montana because they have PIPEDA and two provinces have additional laws upon that. So yeah, we're going to have to work with them. Is it impossible? No. But if we model our laws and we work to protect our way of doing things, but it is consistent with theirs, we qualify for approval under Schrems II, which is a court case that went through the European case. We qualify under that, which means now Europe can transfer data to Montana without a ton of
problems.
So that is a great economic process. Can you imagine our businesses being able to immediately deal with Europe, Canada, Brazil, Malaysia? Sadly, China has a privacy law. They shoot their own people over it. But we have to obey their privacy law. It's impossible to get personal data out of China. Ours is sent there like water. So, yes. That answered the question, I guess?
Yep.
Hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I would have a question for Robin. Ms. Turner.
Madam Chair, Representative.
So, Ms. Turner, what do we have protecting us right now?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway, As Senator Zolnikoff mentioned, we do not have a Consumer Data Privacy Act at this time, and I understand your point. I think, again, given that we have a stronger framework around privacy and do have the protections of the Constitution, why not try to protect data at a higher level?
Follow-up. Could you elaborate on what you're talking about? Because we don't have anything right now that I understand.
Sure. Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway, what I am saying is within our Constitution, we already have an express right of privacy. We are unique among many states in Montana for protections of privacy and individuals. And also, I think that exhibits the desire that our state has had to protect privacy of consumers. I have already stated that I understand that we do not have a Consumer Data Privacy Act at this time. My argument is not that nothing should be put in place, but I'm asking to consider more protections for consumers. I want to make sure my testimony on that was clear.
Okay.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Vice Chair Galloway.
Sponsor.
Senator Zolnikoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chair Galloway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good sponsor. So I love this. I mean, we need something like this. But what have you contemplated? I guess somebody mentioned some amendment. Are we going to bring an amendment, or are we? And I guess the one other question, if I can.
Do you want to answer that one first?
Yeah. Can I just do it? Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway. So. I'm working on a set of friendly amendments with some folks to make it more functional. So remember one thing. If I create this law out of the blue with my own definitions and my own standards, it will be almost nearly impossible to implement across the country. And what happened in other states that have attempted that is they say, fine, we're not going to offer this service from Google, and we're going to not offer this service from Facebook, and we're not going to offer this service at all, and we're not going to offer this service. We're going to shut down this. And all of a sudden, you broke the internet, right? Like, we use the internet. You may love the internet. You may hate the internet. I don't really care. But I want to make sure that everything we have works, but also those definitions, they're easy to comprehend. It's not so vague that it turns into a lawsuit-heavy state where we're just suing every tech company, or they don't comply because it's written poorly. That's why the definitions mattered. But I have been working on some amendments to make sure that this is functional, but also ensures that we have our rights that we do not currently have.
Follow up.
A couple more, please.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, good representative. So have you looked at any of these other countries like the GDPR? I know that Ireland is probably, Northern Ireland, I believe, is the leader in cybersecurity and stuff. So I don't know if they're one of the best. But I didn't know anything about this until I went to that international conference.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway, so there's kind of two schools of thought on privacy rights. And you're going to tell where I come from on this one. The GDPR is very top-heavy, and I'm not an expert on it. I'm not going to pretend to be. It's very top-heavy government down. I want it to be established of fundamental rights moving up instead that says we as individuals have the power, not a very large government agency has the power to start moving pieces around. Montana would have to have almost an entire new department to do that. So I like the top or the bottom. Individuals have the ability to get out and make decisions for themselves. As you know, this is all complicated, but if we have people have the option to opt out, have their data corrected, that's a very good start. And it says, and it puts the control back in the hands of individuals. And that's a big philosophy of mine. One other one, if I could be a king for a day, I would have all of our data about us belong to us as a property right. People can't go into your house. They can't look through your fridge. They can't look through your underwear drawer. But right now, tech companies can look through every single private thing that you have on your phone, which is much more private than that. So I would like it that top down that this belongs to you. Now, getting there is kind of a pipe dream, right? It sounds great, very hard to implement. I'll take this as the next best option.
Another quick follow-up.
Follow-up.
So how do you get around where if you want to use their app, you have to agree to their terms?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway, that's your ultimate decision, but I do believe you should at least know what their terms are, and also if you delete their app, have the ability to also have your data deleted. That's very powerful. It is your choice, though. I deleted my social medias, and I'll tell you what, it was a very freeing experience, and it was my right to do so, and I'll say my life has only gotten better because of it.
One last.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you touched on it, is that we don't want it top-heavy with government. So I'm breezing through here, where are we going to have the foundation in our state government to oversee, embed this, or applicate this, or move it forward, or follow up on it, or...
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway, the private right of action is the big concept, or it's a state right of action. What happened in Illinois was they had a very large biometric privacy bill, and the private right of action led to a lot of endless lawsuits that became a very anti-friendly to business state in that regard. So it's the balance, right? Okay, if a company breaks the law, then the Attorney General can file a right of action. And in the law, a company has the right to fix their error in Montana and say it gives them a few months to fix the error. But if not, then the AG can take them and take it as a right of action. And that's a route to ensure that 800 people don't just start suing willy-nilly. Is that the right approach? I'll tell you what, it is the most political feasible approach, and it will help get the law passed, and that's, a great place to start. That's your implementation.
One
last. Yes.
Follow-up.
Sorry. I'm just trying to get my brain all the way there,
and you're good.
There's not much here to work with. So, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get to how this is going to function. And so basically we're going to be doing this on an individual basis, but then they would turn to the AG if it's not being treated properly.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Galloway, so basically tech companies are very large and have every reason to start following these laws. They're not going to likely break them. If they do and you can identify it, then the Attorney General and the state of Montana would then enforce the law and take them to court. And that is that's a scary thing to have the state of Montana with the AG take them on. So we don't want it to be just a litigious state all of a sudden. although people can argue on the other side, that's a great route to go. But this is, again, it's a starting point. We have nothing right now.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? I have one quick one for Mr. Harkins online, please.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Harkins. So we've heard in testimony a lot about other states' laws, and it was mentioned that Microsoft is kind of the industry leader in privacy. So I was wondering, in your experience, is there anything about this bill that you would change to make it stronger or better?
Well, there are always things that you can do to make any bill stronger in some respects. I think this bill has a lot to like in it and is a very good piece of legislation. And among other things, I think it takes a nuanced approach to consent. So while it does provide for opt-out consent for certain sensitive activities like selling data, using data for targeted advertising, et cetera, it also would require opt-in consent in order to collect sensitive data. So things like geolocation information, biometrics, race, ethnicity, religious beliefs, et cetera. And so I do think it has and provides a framework for consent, among other things, that if the legislature determines down the road that it needs to strengthen or expand the role that consent plays in the bill. Like some states, for example, have included things like allowing consumers to exercise their opt-out rights via an easy button. Sometimes that's called a universal privacy signal or global privacy control. That is something that the legislature could consider doing. And that sort of thing makes it easy for consumers to exercise their opt-out rights at one place and at one time, say by, you know, pressing a button in your web browser or on your phone. But all in all, I think this is an excellent bill and a great start.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As I stated previously, we have nothing. This is a pretty solid start, and with a foundation, we can only move forward and have bigger conversations on it. So with that, I ask for a due pass. Again, I mentioned that there are some amendments being worked on. It's just hard to shop 8 entities that come to you and then make sure that they are what they say they are. I'm gonna add this to it, too. It has been extremely difficult to work with some entities who tell you that this just makes the business, the law, more friendly, and then all of a sudden you realize they're just attempting to water it down. And yes, those have been tech companies, and no, it has not been Microsoft. So I'll tell you, I just want this on the record, I'm very disappointed because I've seen these people's testimonies in other states, and it has been different from what they've told me. I had a conversation with Google about some of the legislation in other states, and they said, well, maybe like Montanans don't need to have those same protections afforded to them versus these other states. That is truly upsetting to me and unacceptable. So they think of us as a state, but I'm going to tell you something. We are a red state. If a red state passes this law, then what's going to happen federally when they're looking at passing, because they are, they're looking at passing this legislation at the federal level, they're going to say to our colleagues from the Republican side, oh, look what Utah and Montana did. So if the more watered down, they're going to say, this is what we want. This is obviously what the states are doing. This is what we want. The more watered down it is, the weaker an action is going to be at the federal level when they decide it's going to happen. The stronger these bills are, the more they're going to say, well, Democrat states have really strong legislation, and then you'll be able to point to Republican states. So this bill, from another perspective, is extremely symbolic nationally. So I just want to put that on everybody's radar. So thank you for the testimony, the long hearing. This is big in more ways than I think even we can comprehend, and I really appreciate the support and the due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Word of the wise to anyone listening out there, never upset a pirate. This concludes the hearing on Senate Bill 384. Okay, we will now open the hearing on Senate Bill 351.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Zolnikov-Ziewel, NIKOV, and Senate District 22 out of Billings. So here's another one for you. This is a lot shorter, and I will keep it short. This is the an act revising laws related to biometric privacy. So basically, there are these companies, and I know you can't name them, but before I get gabbled down, 23andMe and Ancestry.com are the two main ones that we know. And they offer consumer genetic testing products. So you give them your spit in a tube, and they will tell you what your DNA is. And if you have any hereditary issues and your ethnic background. And I'll tell you, it's very cool because they make money off of you paying for the service. So they are behind legislation like this because they want to ensure that consumers feel safe having their data, giving their DNA data away. And so they have been very supportive of this legislation because they don't make money off of selling your data. They make money off of you paying for that subscription and giving your DNA. So the more consumers feel safe about doing it, the more they're willing to do it. So this legislation follows in line with that, and it gives consumers a lot of protections that I'm just looking for it here. I think it, let's see, you have, and it's page 4, number 6. It provides a process for a consumer, or mandates that there's a process for consumers to access their genetic data, delete their genetic data, request and obtain the destruction of the consumer's biological sample. And so this legislation came before me, and it gives a lot of rights to individuals to ensure that if they do share their data with entities like that, their data can, their DNA can be deleted, and all their records can be deleted, and just make sure that consumers have this protections in their hands. So with that, that's what the bill does, and I hope you support it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to proponents in the room, please.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Steve Cape, C-A-P-E, and I'm here representing the Coalition for Safety and Justice. I thank the sponsor for bringing this bill. We do not have any protection even at the very base level. Think about it. With your DNA, if I have your DNA, I have your health. I have your possible health outcomes. I have every piece of information about you, and with your DNA, I know who your relatives are. I know who, you know, your long-lost cousin, Freddie, who will only show up if you win the lottery. And he knows where you're at, too, sadly. So the DNA model is you. Now, combine that information with facial recognition or other information you've put in your emails and things. This is a bill that is a part of an overall privacy protection scheme, and so we are supporting it. But the only amendment, as we did with the others that we would like to see, is that the companies restrict the data to storage within the United States. And the reason why we say that is a lot of these companies place their data in servers all over the world. And to give you an example, in 1992, 1993, our federal government had a wonderful idea, gee, if we could only read people's emails. So they sent the emails, redirected everyone's emails over to England, which had no privacy laws at the time, and they read everybody's emails, and MI6 would report to the federal government what everybody was saying. Or Google, they scan every email you send. They read everything. Want to have some fun? Put in there you're going to take a vacation to, Dubai. And you'll get ads for hotels.
Legally, there is a lot of work going on now that if you're an attorney, you cannot use a regular Gmail account. It's kind of a little gray area, depending on what state you're licensed in. But it's a security issue. It's a breach of attorney-client privilege. It's somebody's reading your mail. Cheer, hi, Grandma, I'm glad you learned to email. Now you'll get ads. So with the addition of biometric data, think about that. There's also the other danger, and this has been pointed out in Congress in a bipartisan manner. If I have your DNA data, I can make a particular biological weapon that will only attack certain people. Now, way back in my misspent youth, I was in the military and spent a lot of time in nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. And as we sat there, beyond being an infantry, that was a nightmare weapon. I'm going to wipe out everybody that has a particular gene. Now, in America, we figured it wouldn't work because we're so interspersed. But think about that. I want to get rid of all bald-headed guys. Yeah, go figure. The hairless few died. Or perhaps there are certain ethnic groups that have particular genetic markers. The virus activates upon hitting that marker. And they can develop those things because we know science can do all kinds of horrible things if they have a bad idea. And we're giving them everybody's information. And let's take a look at my favorite company, Google, has the original founders, the wife and one of the founders of Google, also started 23andMe, and they were pretty good people. Google had this thing, Do No Harm. They took it out of their company deal, took that completely out of their company deal so they could work with the Chinese. The Chinese have them as their major artificial intelligence source. They source everything to them. That's why the balloon was able to move around, because AI, developed by Google, was able to move the balloon around. Thanks, Google. They also collect, there's a small part in HIPAA that allows them to collect every hospital record in the country for research. So since I have your location data, I have everything else, and if I have your DNA data, what else do I need? What privacy do you have left? So this is a great start of a bill. It is protection that we absolutely need. And I really do. I thank the sponsor for bringing this bill, because it protects us at the cellular level, if you will. So with that, I ask for a due pass. Hopefully I haven't scared the death out of you. And yes, sci-fi is somewhat prophetic, but, I personally, you're looking for a small cave in a foreign country. But anyway, I ask for a due pass. Thank you. I stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Cape. Are there further proponents in the room? Seeing none, we'll go to proponents online. Let's hear from Ann Blackwood, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Ann Blackwood, the Executive Director of the Coalition for Genetic Data Protection, which includes Ancestry and 23andMe. I'm here in strong support of SB 351. Work on this bill began in 2017 when the Future Privacy Forum convened a multi-stakeholder group to develop privacy best practices for genetic testing. Those practices have been translated into the bill that's before you today. This bill requires consumers to provide separate express consent, meaning we cannot vary the details in our terms of service or privacy policies for any collection, processing, or sharing of genetic data. The bill requires separate consent for all of the following: analyzing or storing the consumer's biological sample, viewing genetic relatives on our websites, and those parties must both consent to see matches before a match is revealed, using a consumer's genetic data for marketing. Neither Ancestry nor 23andMe do this, but we believe that consent should be required before genetic data can be used for any marketing. Participating in research. And if a consumer opts in for research, they must complete an informed consent form that acknowledges the benefits and risks of the research they've been informed of, the same as any clinical trial in the United States. And finally, sharing their data with any third party would also require express informed consent. SB 351 also empowers consumers to delete their data and to have their biological sample destroyed. They can end their relationship with our companies at any time, and we retain no rights to their genetic data. This approach has broad bipartisan and stakeholder support, including consumer groups and medical ethicists, companies, and policymakers were all involved in the FPF best practices process. Since 2021, similar laws have been passed in 7 states, including Arizona, California, Kentucky, Maryland, Virginia, Utah, and Wyoming. Several other states are also advancing similar measures this year. If passed, this bill will ensure that every genetic testing service is held to the same high standards for privacy and data protection. Our consumers' trust is our top priority. If they don't trust that we're employing strong privacy standards for their genetic data, they simply won't use our services. We thank Senator Zolnikoff for his leadership and request a favorable report. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Seeing no further proponents online, we'll go to opponents in the room, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Robin Turner with the American Civil Liberties Union. With just a small opposition to this bill, I first want to say that reviewing this bill, we have very few concerns with the substance of the bill. I think that this pairs nicely with House Bill, I think it's 602 from 2021, which spoke to law enforcement obtaining DNA search results from a database like this. If you look at page 4, it speaks to how this bill would need to, that the law enforcement would have to comply with that. This requires a warrant for pursuing the activity, and it also allows consumers to have control over their data. Really, the only request we would make is, again, given that we have this express property right and privacy right around our own genetic materials, would the committee consider allowing for a private cause of action under Section 6? Again, just given that there could be such devastating results for a violation. But otherwise, really appreciate the senator's good work on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents in the room, please. Seeing none, we'll move to informational witnesses in the room. Seeing none and seeing none online, we'll go to questions from the committee. All right. Okay, Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quickly for the sponsor.
Madam Chair, Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Senator. I just wanted to, Madam Chair, Senator, I wanted to get your thoughts on the being able to make that amendment for a private cause of action and what your thoughts are on it.
Madam Chair, Representative Bishop, it's interesting because it's actually the companies who tend to do this who are requesting the law. So having an egregious violation is not exactly to be expected, but again, it gets into that whole, if everybody's filing lawsuits, we talked about the previous bill, then we don't want to be looked at as a state that just files endless lawsuits here and there. I think this protection is good enough as is. Also, again, I'd like it to pass and not get vetoed because of those kinds of concerns. So I am in that political reality zone sometimes too much.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, does the sponsor wish to close?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I know that it was long, but both of them together are kind of long, but I just want you to think of your DNA. Currently, do you own your DNA? Do you know what you can learn about someone? And from their DNA, you can learn what time they're likely to wake up. Yes, you can learn about what's going to happen to their hair, but you can learn what their likelihood of diabetes is, ADHD, heart issues, genetic variants that could impact you today or in the future. It is fascinating what you can learn about people, and we are just breaking into it. So just think of how much more DNA can tell about you than you even know about yourself. It's a crazy time we live in. It's really important that we start putting some protections in place for your DNA and your rights regarding it. So with that, I ask for a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes the hearing on Senate Bill 351. We're going to take a quick recess here, but just so as a little refresher, we will be doing executive action on Senate Bill 32, Senate Bill 33, Senate Bill 208, and Senate Joint Resolution 10. Senate Bill 32, Senate Bill 33, Senate Bill 208, and Senate Joint Resolution 10. And I will write them on the board in just a moment when I get up. Okay, we will recess for 10 minutes, and we will meet back here at 5:20. House Energy is in recess. House Energy will come back to order. Members, we will now begin our executive action. We will open executive action on Senate Bill 32. Vice Chair Galloway.
Madam Chair, I do move House Bill Senate, or no, let me start over. I move Senate Bill 32 do pass.
Be concurred in.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we have a motion on the table.
Okay.
Is there discussion? This was Senate Bill brought by Senator Cuff. This deals with pipeline safety regulations. Seeing no discussion. Voice vote for Senate Bill 32. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Seeing none, are there proxies?
Representative Brewster, aye by proxy. Representative Casey Knutsey, aye by proxy. Representative Kometz, aye by proxy. And Representative Kastmeyer, aye by proxy.
Okay. Senate Bill 32 has passed unanimously. Do we have anyone who would like to carry this on the floor?
I will.
Vice Chair Galloway. This concludes executive action on Senate Bill 32. We will now open executive action on Senate Bill 33. Vice Chair Galloway.
Madam Chair, I do move Senate Bill 33 do concur.
Thank you, members. You've heard the motion.
Oh, but I'm consistent.
This was the bill also by Senator Cuff. This bill was by the request of the PSC, and this repeals Class C motor carrier regulations. Is there discussion?
Question.
Question's been called. Okay, we'll go ahead and do a voice vote. All in favor of Senate Bill 33, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Are there proxies?
Madam Chair, Representative Brewster's aye by proxy. Representative Knutson is aye by proxy. Representative Kometz is aye by proxy, and Representative Kastmeyer is aye by proxy.
Okay, thank you, Vice Chair Galloway. Senate Bill 33 has been concurred in unanimously. Do we have a volunteer to carry it on the floor?
33, we're on. Paul, were you willing? I had your name wrote on here for some reason.
You did. I don't know why.
All right.
I don't think I should carry this. Excuse me.
Okay. I will carry it. This concludes executive action on Senate Bill 33. We will now open executive action on Senate Bill 208. Vice Chair Galloway.
Madam Chair, I do move Senate Bill 208 do concur in.
Thank you, members. We've heard the motion by Vice Chair Galloway. Senate Bill 208 was brought by Senator Small. This is the bill to prohibit local governments from banning or limiting energy choices, specifically natural gas. Is there discussion? Vice Chair Sullivan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be voting no today. I'm just looking back at my notes from the hearing and having the local government folks from the League and the cities come in and talk about how they're already precluded from doing what is contemplated in this bill, and that what this could do is create confusion about their ability to create safe zoning for the location of just infrastructure, not saying no to certain energy, but just saying energy infrastructure should be in certain areas for safety. And I'm concerned that this bill, while the sponsor said it did not do this, I have concerns that this will create a confusion amongst local government and the state on their ability to place fuel sources in safe zoning areas. Madam Chair.
Further discussion on the motion? I will just jump in, and I wanted to just kind of bring maybe an alternate perspective when we're thinking about this bill. I like it because I don't remember off the top of my head, I guess it could be in my notes, if the realtors came in on this bill, but I know that I did have a couple that had reached out to me that were in favor of this bill. Natural gas is, it's used in homes, obviously, for heating and stuff. And I think that that's a, I think that we should not potentially prohibit that, especially, you know, looking at our sort of our energy market here in Montana. It gives me a little stress to think about electrifying all new buildings. So I will be voting in favor of this today. Is there further discussion? Vice Chair Galloway, did you want to chime in?
I wasn't here for this, but I'm aware of communities around the nation that have had some problems or declarations that may not be immediate, but they're trying to ban certain types of utility access to people. And I think it's, some of it's very dangerous without us having to the ability to replace that first. You can do a mandate, which is, I think the whole crux of this bill is to try to keep those mandates that we have to first have the ability to replace it, not wish we could. So I'll be for it.
Representative Fielder.
Madam Chair, this bill is all about more freedoms, less restrictions, and that's why I'm in favor of it.
Seeing no further discussion, we will do a roll call vote, please.
Representative Bishop?
No.
Representative Brewster?
Aye, by proxy.
Representative Fielder?
Yes.
Representative Galloway?
Yes.
Representative Green?
Aye.
Representative Harvey?
Yes.
Representative Kazmaier?
Aye, by proxy.
Representative Kometz?
Aye, by proxy.
Representative C. Knudsen?
Aye, by proxy.
Representative Cordham?
No.
Representative Phelan?
Yes.
Representative Sullivan?
No.
Excuse me. Chair Zolnikov?
Aye. Members, the motion carries 10 ayes, 3 nays. Representative Green, did you want to be the floor carrier for this one? Okay. This concludes executive action on Senate Bill 208. We will now open executive action on Senate Joint Resolution 10. Vice Chair Galloway.
Madam Chair, I do move Senate Joint Resolution 10 do pass or do concur. I'm not sure on this.
Members, we have heard the motion. Is there discussion? Vice Chair Sullivan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I propose or move amendment SJ0010.002.001. Madam Chair.
Members, we've heard the motion. Vice Chair Sullivan, would you like to discuss your amendment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So this amendment, it adds a section in red, if you look at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, that if the federal government were to decide to remove the Snake River dams because of any of the needs that they would have, if the dams were deemed outdated, if there was a treaty issue, anything to do with salmon, that we would call on the federal government to ensure that adequate replacement power is made available to the state of Montana. So that's all it does, is saying if the federal government removes the dam, that we demand that they make replacement power available to our state.
All right. Is there discussion on the amendment? Representative Fielder.
Madam Chair, these lower Snake River dams are more than just about power generation. They're about transportation with the barge traffic that goes up and down the river. They're about recreation with the wildlife management areas that have been set up, funded by the Snake River dams mitigation. They're about fish hatcheries that have been put in place to do that, do what fish hatcheries do. So this is not just about power generation. It's about a whole economy and a whole lifestyle that's centered around those dams. Madam Chair.
Further discussion, Vice Chair Galloway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree completely with my compadre there on his, but also the big factor that they have to think about is these also control flooding in those areas. And a lot of the areas that have dams, you know, that's a big issue. You start letting that water just run free again, the erosion and the problems, and you lose the irrigation possibilities for your farmland. It's not just about the power. There's a lot of little other things that are affected by this. So definitely support we need that type of bill.
Vice Chair Galloway, we are discussing the amendment. Okay. Is there further? Representative Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reflect that if we just look at the whereas clauses, so we're just talking about this resolution and what this resolution is focused on. I think I just counted 15 whereas clauses, and I think 13 of them are specific to power generation. So it seems appropriate that that we might consider specifically to this, while there may be other aspects of the dam that are important, and those are mentioned, they are a very small part of this resolution. The focus of this resolution really is on energy and energy replacement, and so I think this is an appropriate amendment considering that, and I'll be a yes.
Further discussion on the amendment? I guess I do have one question for you, Vice Chair Sullivan. Did you happen to run this by Senator Cuff at all with the amendment?
Madam Chair, I did not. This is something I came up with, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Sullivan. I guess I would just add, sorry, I'm just kind of looking through this right now. I do like that we, I like the bill as is, but that we're on the amendment. However, I guess what I do appreciate about the amendment is that it does acknowledge that, you know, if this were to happen, even though that's what this resolution is trying to prevent, it puts a call in our statute for, you know, what we would want as a replacement. So with that, we will call for question on the amendment. Representative Fielder.
If I could just follow up a little bit of my background. I worked as a fish and wildlife biologist for a hydroelectric utility on the Columbia River system. As part of that, I was a president of the Association of Power Biologists, which was biologists from power companies all throughout the Pacific Coast. I toured these dams. I know them intimately. And I think that this amendment basically waters down, pardon the pun, the original intent of this this bill. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Galloway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now that I'm starting to get my brain working, if you go from lines 27 forward, it pretty much already covers the usage and the power that's we're dependent on. So I think we've already kind of covered it. So I think this amendment would be redundant.
Okay. All right. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, we will go to a roll call vote on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bishop.
Yes.
Representative Brewster.
No by proxy.
Representative Fielder.
No.
Vice Chair Galloway.
No.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Harvey.
Yes.
Representative Kazmaier.
No by proxy.
Representative Kometz.
No by proxy.
Representative Knudsen.
No by proxy.
Representative Cordham.
Yes.
Representative Phelan.
No.
Vice Chair Sullivan.
Yes.
Chair Zolnikov.
No. Members, the amendment fails with 4 in favor and 9 against. We are back on the bill as unamended. Is there discussion? Vice Chair Sullivan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be a no today, just in that I liked how the amendment would have contemplated the reaction of our state if despite the desires of our state to have the dams remain, if they were to not be there for whatever reason by action of the federal government, that we haven't asked for them to step in and replace what they had taken. And so I will be a no today, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Vice Chair Galloway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think if you read on page 2, line 2, whereas the continued operation of Lower Snake River dams is central to the reliability, meeting the region's clean energy goals, providing dispatchable capacity to prevent blackouts and ramping capacity, integrate with other renewable resources, I think it pretty much covers that we're going to have a deficit that needs replaced if they're going to rip them out. So I think it's a good bill.
Thank you. And I would just add that I am a strong supporter of this resolution. I think Representative Fielder took a lot of what I was going to say, but the dams are about a lot more than just simply energy. And I think back to the hearing and the discussion revolving around all of the money for things like wildlife habitat and stuff that is tied to these dams. So I like that. I just really like this resolution, and I think that there's a much bigger picture here, so I will be supporting it today. Seeing no further discussion, we will do a roll call vote on Senate Joint Resolution 10.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bishop.
No.
Representative Brewster.
Aye by proxy.
Representative Fielder.
Yes.
Vice Chair Galloway.
Yes.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Harvey.
Yes.
Representative Kazmaier.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Kometz.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Knudsen.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Cordham.
No.
Representative Phelan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Sullivan.
No.
Chair Zolnikov.
Yes. Members, the motion carries. Did we have anyone that wanted to carry this on the floor? Representative Fielder. All right, this concludes executive action on Senate Joint Resolution 10, and that concludes our executive action for the day. A couple announcements before we adjourn. We will be having, I think as we're all aware, floor on Friday. But because we meet on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then we're off on Monday for Easter, and then Wednesday we are on the floor all day of next week, so we won't be having committee. We will meet immediately after floor session to do executive action on our remaining Senate bills, so they will be able to meet that deadline. So please just keep your ears open on the floor. We won't be hearing any bills, so we will be able to just meet after floor, and it won't conflict with public participation or anything like that. So
on Wednesday, were
those days? This is on Friday.
Right, this Friday.
This we'll Friday. So
action on the two bills we just heard.
Yes. So we will do executive action on Senate Bill 109 and then the two Senate bills that we heard today as well. So, and this, just for clarification's sake, this is this Friday coming up. So please be here right after floor, and we will make it quick because I know I really want to go home and see my cat for Easter. So.
Calf.
My cat. Oh, and one more announcement for the committee. There is a committee dinner tonight. Everybody is invited. Please feel free to bring your significant other. Let me pull up the email here. It is at the Country Club, and it is at 6 p.m. So Meadow Green Country Club, Green Meadow. I'm getting bad information here from Vice Chair Galloway. But it is with the Senate Energy Committee as well. So if you don't like senators, maybe don't go. But with that, House Energy is adjourned.
Is that the committee party?
No.